in the villa of Amen, stands a solitary candle.
That's the late David Bowie from his new album, Black Star. I'm Tom McDonald, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Dave Heller is off this evening. Bowie died last night after battling cancer. He was 69. Over 40 years ago, David Bowie came to Philadelphia to record his album, Young Americans. In 1974, American R&B music was more popular in England than in the U.S., and Bowie wanted to tap into the famous Philadelphia sound. For about 6 weeks, he worked on the record at Sigma Sound Studio on 12th Street. After the release of Young Americans, some of the original session tapes were lost. They were recently rediscovered at the Sound Archive of Drexel University. Here is Bowie working on the song, Can You Hear Me?
So it opens on that riff. Yeah, it's on that opening riff. It's... C, innit?
The founder of Sigma Studios, Joe Tarsha, remembers Bowie worked all night, 7 o'clock till dawn.
There was at least a dozen kids outside the studio at 7, and they'd be there at dawn when he left. And he would just sort of nod at them and go into the studio, which you might say was a little cold. When he finished the project, he made us go out and get sandwiches and sodas and so forth. Invited all the kids into the studio and played the entire album for them.
The Young Americans album went gold. David Bowie would return to Philadelphia for a week of performances at the Tower Theater in Upper Darby, which became his first live album called David Live. After a severed pig's head was thrown at a mosque in North Philadelphia in December, religious leaders and city officials condemned the act and vowed to find those responsible. 1 month later, WHYY's Katie Culinary reports the police investigation has hit a roadblock.
Surveillance video at the Al-Aqsa Islamic Society Mosque shows someone in a red pickup truck throwing the pig's head out the window. But investigators say the video is too blurry to read the truck's license plate. A spokeswoman for the Philadelphia Police Department says it has no suspects in the case. The FBI would only say the investigation is ongoing.
The case is still being investigated as a potential hate crime. Unfortunately, it's a difficult case to investigate.
Rue Landau is executive director of Philadelphia's Commission on Human Relations, which is acting as a liaison between the mosque and law enforcement.
This is a crime that was intended to harm a certain group of people or a certain place with institutional vandalism that sends ripples throughout a community of fear and concern.
But the mosque community outreach coordinator, Adab Ibrahim, says the sense of fear did not last long.
We just felt, again, like a flashback from 9/11. But then soon after, the outpour of support was just overwhelming.
The mosque has received cards and flowers from people as far away as Australia. On Saturday, dozens of people helped paint a mural on the side of the mosque called Windows to Peace. Ibrahim says finding those who threw the pig's head would help members heal.
But we're also grateful that this has brought us closer as a community.
Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
Philadelphia School District Superintendent William Hite has selected two charter school operators to take over management of two district elementary schools through the Renaissance Initiative. But as WHYY's Kevin McCrory reports, Hite today changed course on a third school, choosing not to tap the city's top school turnaround operator.
Hite's recommendation matches West Philadelphia's Huey Elementary with Global Leadership Academy charter and Logan's Cook Elementary with the Great Oaks Foundation. Hite originally pitched charter conversion for Wister Elementary in Germantown. Mastery Charter applied to operate that school, but in a surprising reversal, Hite recommended the school now remain under district control, citing new evidence of academic progress at Wister.
This has very little to do with Mastery as a provider. Mastery has shown strong evidence of success, had a very good application for this school. This was more about what was happening at Wister and the fact that we saw evidence of growth there.
Wister parent Kenya Nation Holmes praised Hite's decision. She objected to the unilateral nature of the original proposal.
I don't hate charter schools. I don't hate Mastery. I just hate the way they went about it. And now, and being through the process, I feel great that I showed my children, if you stand up for what you believe in, you can accomplish it.
Height says all other options for intervention at Worcester remain on the table. West Philadelphia pastor Pamela Williams originally harshly criticized the move to convert UWE. After looking at the data and visiting Global Leadership Academy's existing charter school, she changed her mind.
The school district at this point, in my mind, is incapable of turning UWE around.
For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCory.
The Black Lives Matter movement has thrust the nation's racial divide into the spotlight. But of course, the issues that plague people of color didn't crop up overnight. 10 years ago, public radio and TV host Tavis Smiley laid out evidence that blacks in America are at a disadvantage when it comes to education, health care, job opportunities, and the criminal justice system in a New York Times best-selling book, The Covenant with Black America. A new edition, The Covenant with Black America 10 Years Later, has just come out. Tavis Smiley spoke with NewsWorks Tonight producer Shai Benyakov.
Tavis Smiley, welcome to NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks, Shai. Good to be on with you.
The Covenant with Black America was a plan of action for fixing racial disparities in America. So other than 10 being a nice round number, why did you decide to re-examine this now?
We re-examined it now because the conditions of Black America have so worsened. The suffering of Black America still tends to be rendered invisible, although it's so clear for all of us to see, I think, thanks to social media. And sadly, 10 years later, the data indicates, it pains me to say it, that Black America has lost ground in every single leading economic category.
Obviously, one of the major national events of the past 10 years is the financial meltdown and the ensuing recession. Do you think you can attribute any of the widening of the divide to the recession? Did it kind of exacerbate a system that was already weighted against blacks in America?
Oh, great question, and there's no doubt about it. Yes, it was that Great Recession, as they called it. More black wealth has been wiped out over the last 10 years than at any point in all of America's history. This book came out in 2006, 2 years before Barack Obama showed up in the White House. So this is not a book that's assessing blame or casting aspersion on him per se. The book is not about Barack Obama. There will be, trust me, plenty of books written about what Obama did or didn't do vis-a-vis black people. I might even write one of them. But it is the case that on his watch, ironically, in the era of the first black president, the bottom fell out for black America. How the historians are going to juxtapose those two facts, I can't wait to see.
You know, I'm sure that you've heard from a lot of people who do not share your view of the dynamic that creates some of these divides. When people look at these statistics and they say, yes, there are these disparities, but it's not the fault of a broken system. It's cultural. It's what's happening in a community. It's individual choices. What do you say when you kind of encounter people who kind of don't share the point of view about the underlying causes?
First of all, everybody always agrees with me, so I don't know what you're talking about. That was a joke, Sean. No, I do meet people who disagree with me, of course, and that's healthy. You know, the debate is healthy. So having said that, when I encounter people who disagree, you know, I want to hear their point of view. But again, only if that point of view is relevant to the data and not to a bunch of emotions. And at the end of the day, here's what I've learned in writing this book and the one I did 10 years ago, that on most all of these issues, Shai, it's not an either-or solution, it's a both-and. That is to say, it's about black people holding themselves responsible before they attempt to hold other people accountable. In that sense, again, it's not either-or, it's both-and. And that is applicable, I think, to all 10 of these covenants in this new book, The Covenant, 10 Years Later.
And I should point out that in each of these chapters, you have, you know, sort of solutions that individuals can take, steps
right.
Individuals can take, and steps the government can take, and steps that, you know, communities can take. With that out there, you know, on criminal justice, and, you know, an interesting thing has happened since the book came out. You have both Democrats and Republicans calling for big reforms in the criminal justice system, including,
right.
You know, in our area, governor and presidential candidate Chris Christie, particularly with respect to drug crimes. Did you foresee that when you first wrote this book 10 years ago?
I did not. I didn't want the narrative and didn't believe the narrative 10 years later would be that we'd lost ground in every major economic category. That saddens me. But there are moments for optimism, and if not optimism, certainly hope in this book. And that's one of them, that on criminal justice reform, there finally is a bipartisan conversation about what can happen. Oftentimes in this country, we do the right things for the wrong reasons, but if it's the economics of prison overcrowding and, you know, cost per prisoner and et cetera, et cetera, if it's the economics that get us to a conversation about reforming our criminal justice system, I'll take it, Shy, any way I can get it. But I think you're right, and the book points that out, that there is hope that on the criminal justice reform issues that we can get a bipartisan consensus, but only, again, in this election if voters demand that. And that's why this book is so important. It lays out the agenda, what we can do, how we can exercise our agency to make demands on the things that matter most to all of us.
Tavis Smiley, congratulations on the book, and thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Shy, for having me on. Appreciate you.
Tavis Smiley will be discussing his book all this week on The Tavis Smiley Show, weeknights at 11:30 on WHYY-TV. The Wilma Theater in Philadelphia has received a gift of $5 million that will transform the way it produces plays. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports it's not just the building that's changing.
The easy part of this $5 million matching grant from the Wincote Foundation for a campaign total of $10 million is the building. It opened 20 years ago at Broad and Spruce Streets, and now it's going to get a new facade, and the lobby will be converted into a coffee shop and bar. The hard part is what happens inside the building. $2.5 million will go toward nurturing a group of actors into a company that develops performances together through improvisation, physical games, and collaborative exercises. Artistic director Blanca Zitzka says it's nearly impossible to quantify how important that is.
So many times you are talking about artistic values, which are very difficult to define. It's much easier to answer a question, what will happen if we create a building? And, you know, it's easier to raise money because it's something concrete. But art is not concrete.
Zitzka says most theater is done on an assembly line where actors have just 3 weeks to rehearse a play. Her vision is to develop a company that will work for years together to evolve their own style. Zitzka has been pushing this vision for years, and only recently has she put it on stage with the Wilma Theater's production of Antigone and Don Juan Comes Home from Iraq. Leonard Haas of the Wincote Foundation says the $5 million gift is a leap of faith.
You want to offer a very rich and nurturing atmosphere for the actors to work and develop and create, and that comes down to a lot of times money. You know, they need to, you know, be paid for their work.
The Wincote Foundation was created with money from the Haas family, so as part of the gift, the theater building will be renamed Wilma at Aurora after the Haas family matriarch, Chara Aurora Cooper Haas. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
This disclosure, the Wincote Foundation supports WHYY. In today's headlines, Philadelphia's former police commissioner Charles Ramsey has been hired as a public safety consultant for Wilmington, Delaware. Wilmington Mayor Dennis Williams and Chief of Police Bobby Cummings announced today that Ramsey will be advising officials as they try to cut violence. Ramsey served as Philadelphia's police commissioner from 2008 until 2015. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie announced today the state legislature struck a deal on a proposal to ask New Jersey voters to expand casino gambling to the northern part of the state. After weeks of presenting rival plans, leaders reached a compromise that will allow the question to be placed on the ballot in November. It remains unclear whether it will have enough support. Taking a look at our weather forecast, little chilly tonight, clear with a low of 24 degrees. Mostly cloudy, warmer with a high of 45. Tuesday, Wednesday, sunshine and windy with a high of only 29. 32 degrees in Philadelphia, 30 in Wilmington and Berlin, New Jersey. Still ahead, as part of our new series, Every Zip Philadelphia, Mayor Jim Kenney reflects on his favorite childhood hangout spot in South Philadelphia.
I went out the door at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. I didn't come back till 8 o'clock at night. There was always something to do, and there was always a league that was being formed.
That's coming up as NewsWorks Tonight continues.
My name is George Allport. As the CEO of Keystone Precision Instruments, making decisions is a part of my job. One of the best decisions I've ever made was to earn an executive MBA from St. Joseph's University. With a convenient local campus, a one-year program, and no overnight stays required, I was able to earn a degree that I use every single day.
Open class for visitors Friday, January 15th. More at sju.edu/visitEMBA. SJU supports WHYY.
Oil prices are down. Good for you and me. Not so good, though, if oil's what you're selling.
Imports of toilet paper and other products have been really backed up, so to speak. Even food staples, beans, rice, pasta, things that the government controls the price of, have become more scarce in recent years.
I'm Kai Rizdal. How Venezuela is dealing with sliding crude. The story next time on Marketplace from APM.
Tonight at 6:30 on WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Tom McDonald, in for Dave Heller. Though winter is settling in, it's not too soon to look ahead to the spring and summer night skies. As he always does on Mondays, our regular host, Dave Heller, talks with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute.
Derek, I can't wait to get out of doors again.
We have a really wonderful opportunities this spring and summer to observe the planets dancing around in the evening sky.
Now, how about keynote events like meteor showers, comets, eclipses?
Well, there are, of note, 12 to 14 meteor showers during the course of the year, two of which are really prominent and worth seeing. One is the Perseid meteor shower that happens every August 12th, right around that date. The other is the Geminid meteor shower that happens in the second week of December, around December 14th. So while the others aren't as prominent, if you happen to be outside in the evening enjoying a nice dark sky, it's always worth the time to look up and see how many meteors you can count, these little tiny bits of space rock that fall into the Earth's atmosphere. And at any time, you might be able to catch a really bright, what's called fireball or bolide. So even though it may not be a specific meteor shower, it's still a good idea to take a look and see what you can see. As for eclipses, it turns out that we have two solar and two lunar eclipses this year. Now, the lunar eclipses aren't really very impressive. They are what are called penumbral, which means that the moon passes through the lighter portion of the Earth's shadow. And so we won't see very much color on the surface of the moon at all.
Any solar eclipses of note in our region?
Yes, there are two solar eclipses next year, but neither one very significant for us. However, what we can begin to do is prepare for the total solar eclipse of 2017 in August, which will come right across the central portion of the United States. It'll be viewable from the Philadelphia area, although not in totality.
How close can one go and see the whole shebang?
Well, if you head down to South Carolina, you'll be able to catch it down in the Carolinas without any difficulty at all. And if you have relatives that live out in the Midwest or even on the far northwestern portion of the United States, you'll be able to find the path of totality out there as well. The point of maximum eclipse actually comes somewhere down around Tennessee, Kentucky area of the U.S.
You describe the dance of the planets. I'm wondering if they're dancing to either jazz or funk music.
While the planets will be dancing in the evening skies this spring and this summer, we're going to start this month at the night skies at the observatory with an astronomer who's also a jazz and funk sax player. Dylan Brout is a PhD candidate at the University of Pennsylvania, and he's going to bring us some real astro food for thought this month about the fate of our universe, some of which may be tied to dark matter. Now, Brout originally worked with one of the three scientists who first discovered dark matter. That's Nobel laureate Adam Rice. And Dylan's program will be this Thursday evening at the Franklin Institute's Night Sky at the Observatory starting at 6 p.m.
Derek, before I let you go, let's focus on China's space aspirations.
We may have forgotten that China actually has an active rover on the surface of the moon still doing exploration after it landed there in December of 2013. Now, the space probe that's there, the rover that's there, unfortunately can't really rove around very much anymore. It's become a stationary research station. But while it was roving around, it identified a type of basalt that had not been identified by either Russian rovers or Apollo astronauts when they were there many years ago. We've heard talk that not only does China want to establish its own space station, but we've also heard some talk about the possibility that China would want to send explorers to at least circumnavigate the moon, and who knows, maybe in the future, perhaps plan a landing on the moon as well.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Franklin Institute Chief Astronomer Derek Pitts speaking with NewsWorks Tonight host Dave Heller. WHYY's new community storytelling project, Every Zip Philadelphia, is asking the question, what place means the most to you in your neighborhood? In this Zip postcard produced by Alex Lewis, Mayor Jim Kenney describes his favorite childhood haunt in South Philadelphia.
The place I spent the most time in, 19148, was probably my rec center at Burke Playground at 2nd and Jackson, where I spent every day there, every day of my youth there. I lived around the corner. I went out the door at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. I didn't come back till 8 o'clock at night. There was always something to do. There was always a league that was being formed, handball, basketball, foot hockey, hockey without ice skates. It's hockey with on feet. And then we played roller hockey, which was a great league there, too. I got this scar, if you could see it. I got kicked in the head with a pair of skates. Somebody was in a fight, and they hit me in the face. And I worked there, actually, in my teenage years as a special summer play leader at SPL. We did all kinds of stuff. We flooded the basketball court one winter to create an ice rink that didn't work very well. But it was fun trying. We put up a tennis court for the first time. We put the lines out ourselves and requisitioned the tennis equipment. And what tennis wasn't like a big deal of a sport there. Tennis was kind of highbrow for that neighborhood. So we helped bring that there. It was just fun stuff. So I grew up there and then worked there, and it's still active today. This is Jim Kenney, the mayor of Philadelphia. A place that meant the most to me in 19148 zip code is Burke Playground at 2nd and Jackson.
That audio postcard was brought to you by Every Zip Philadelphia, a new collaborative project of WHYY and AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Binyakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Tomorrow evening, That's History's Jonathan Zimmerman considers what might really be driving the push among some Republicans to reform sentencing guidelines for drug offenders. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom McDonald for NewsWorks Tonight.
The University of the Arts Continuing Studies Division supports WHYY. Located in Center City, Philadelphia, UArts offers evening and weekend classes for adults. Creative offerings include DIY workshops and enrichment classes. Continuing Studies also offers 7 certificate programs for working creative professionals. Certificates include social media marketing, web design, photography, and more. The spring information session is on Wednesday, January 13th at 5:30 p.m. Details at cs.uarts.edu.
Tomorrow night, it's an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's final State of the Union address. I'm Audie Cornish. Join me as we hear reaction from Congress, the official Republican response, and in-depth analysis with NPR reporters from the campaign trail in Iowa to the halls of Capitol Hill. It's special coverage of President Obama's last State of the Union address from NPR News.
Tomorrow night at 9 on WHYY.
Next time on The World, say you just flew into New York from overseas. There's an avocado in your bag. The customs agent takes it to a special place.
Probably one of the largest garbage disposals in the world.
In go the hams and salamis, mangoes and yams. Every day, 400 pounds of food.
In the end, it all goes into the grinder, never to be seen again.
The food in your luggage on The World.
Tonight at 8 on WHYY.